Hey everyone, on this week's episode, I'm joined by Scott Foster, the Chicago-based accountant who famously played 14 minutes of shutout hockey for the Chicago Blackhawks in 2018. We talk in depth about what it meant to himself as well as friends and family, and the crushing amount of media attention that resulted from it. We also go into Scott's college career at Western Michigan and some Chicago Beer League hockey talk. It's an incredible story, and I'm so happy Scott was willing to come on and give us perspective. Enjoy! Scott, thanks so much for joining me today. Have things kind of calmed down since your miraculous night for the Chicago Blackhawks a few years ago?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, hockey people, they love stories. They love talking about things that have happened in the past and stuff like that. So in those circles, you know, people want to talk about 14 minutes of hockey, which is crazy to think about how many minutes I've spent on the ice throughout my life. But, you know, in the general working world and stuff like that, it's brought up. If I get introduced to someone new or something like that, someone always wants to kind of lead with that, which is kind of funny when you're working your job as an accountant and they want to tell a story about, you know, a hockey story that has nothing to do with your work. But for all intents and purposes, yeah, things have kind of returned mostly to normal.
Is it pretty cool, though, when you go into a work meeting and they introduce you as the guy that played in the NHL after doing accountant work during the afternoon that same day?
Yeah, I mean, I remember times not too long after when that night happened that, you know, there's client meetings and stuff like that you're getting almost like requested to come in and say hello. And I'm clearly just like a back office guy that just, you know, works behind the scenes, and now people are asking to say hello or grab a picture or whatever, and I'm like, I don't even wear dress shoes to work. Like, if I'm gonna have to start doing this, maybe I need to start throwing a tie on or something like
You've
that.
You've kind of become a pseudo celebrity with it, like especially in the goalie world too.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like D, E, F list, something like that, but you definitely gave some beer leaguers probably some stories or one for the ages, maybe, for sure.
Well, let's kind of go back a little bit before this even happened, though, because a lot of people didn't know your background. I mean, you played youth hockey, you played college hockey, Division I at Western Michigan. So what was your route like to get to school, and then what it was like once you got there?
So I grew up in Sarnia, Ontario. We had you know, a solid hockey programs there. We didn't have a triple A program until I got to about Pee Wee. And that's when my area, you know, we got our first, it was called the Lambton Lightning. So it was actually a county team, not even like a city team. So they got kids from all over. So I started playing triple A hockey, around the Pee Wee age. And in my area, it was big to kind of get into junior hockey, regardless of what level it was at. So anything kind of below the OHL, so junior B, junior C, something like that, you wanted to kind of get into playing that. So as a teenager, I spent my first season in playing junior C, and then I played a couple of years in junior B for the Petrolia Jets at the time, the Western Ontario Junior B Hockey League or something like that. It's now amalgamated with all kinds of stuff, as you can probably guess. Everything changes over the course of time. So out of that league, it was relatively well recruited at that time. So it was a good place to be for trying to get into a U.S. college. There was a lot of coaches that had played from those areas, so they went back to areas to recruit like that, because they had played in those leagues themselves. So after playing a couple years in the Western Junior B Hockey League there, you know, I was able to get into Western Michigan and play my 4 years there.
Had you always had your eye on going to U.S. college?
I think growing up in the area that I did, probably as a kid, I was more focused on playing major junior, like get into the OHL. I had an older cousin that played through there on a couple different teams. And we had a home team in the Sarnia Sting. They moved there when I was a kid, and I went to a lot of those games. So you kind of envision yourself playing in that league. And then as I got older and just kind of development curve and stuff like that, it became probably less of the route and just and also talking to my cousin and his experiences and things like that, it just things weren't kind of lining up on though in that regard. So maybe late bloomer or whatever, because I didn't go to college until I was 20, which isn't kind of outside of the norm really in college hockey, but it was a good path for me. And but definitely not one that when I was a kid that I probably was dreaming about.
Right. I mean, you came in and played right off the bat, though. So was that a good experience, your first couple of years being at Western Michigan?
Yeah, I think it was good timing. They had a senior that was leaving that had played a lot, so the job was kind of open, more or less. So you just battled for playing time. So I was able to at least get, more or less like half the games in my freshman year, which depending on the situation, like that, I was pretty happy with the opportunity that was there.
Did you expect, though, when you got there, first that you're going to play right off the bat like that? But did you end up thinking that accounting was going to be the route you were going to take? I mean, so many of us end up at school undecided. Did you have kind of a clear plan as to what you wanted to do after hockey?
No idea. The even in high school, I remember it was my mom would probably tell you it was like pulling teeth just to get me to like pick classes. I was all over the map. Even when I was looking at schools, at that point I just said, all right, do they have a business college? And if they had a business college, then I'll figure it out from there. So it was probably sometime in my freshman year, sophomore year that some of the accounting classes just kind of clicked, and it wasn't necessarily, a love for them. It was just kind of, I can understand this. It seems to work for me. So then I just started kind of pursuing that stuff on the academic side. Yeah, no idea going in what path I would take other than I'll go into the business school and kind of see where it goes.
And now you're quite possibly one of the most famous accountants, at least in North America, we could say the world. But what was the high water mark of your college career? Like any games that really stick out that were really special to you?
So in my sophomore year, we went we had a 3 week where we spent on the road, and it actually coincides with what was probably my worst semester that I had in school because we spent so many days away from the classroom. But the we played up at Cornell, and their senior class hadn't lost in years at home.
So what year was this, do you think? Because we overlapped in our college careers. I was
Yeah,
01 to
so
05.
it would have been the 03-04 season.
Yeah, they were good. Was that McKee or Lenevu in that point? Probably
That would
McKee.
have been McKee,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, they lost like two games that whole year.
Yeah, so we went up there to play them, and I remember on the Friday night we were hanging tough. We had the lead, and they scored real late to tie. And to this day, we still can't figure out that the puck actually ever went in the net. So our coach was going ballistic, and he refused to even have us come to the rink in the morning for like another morning skate on the Saturday. Like he was so mad at what took place Friday night. And we went in there on the Saturday night and we beat them. And we with the way the dressing room is right by the student section, we sang a fight song, full door open, like, and then just packed our stuff and left.
So people that are listening to this might not have an idea what it's like at Cornell. Can you describe what the atmosphere is like for the visiting team and especially for the visiting goaltender?
It's intense. One, it's a phenomenal college hockey rink where the students and the fans are right on top of you. They love their hockey there, so it's packed. They throw stuff on the ice during player introductions at the beginning of the game. They got the newspapers up like they don't care. It's loud, it's vocal. They've got the coordinated chants just yelling all night. It's exactly what college hockey and college sports should be like.
And it's like the squarest corners you could ever imagine, too. Like, you're never going to get to handle the puck in that rink if they dump it in the
No.
corner.
And it's kind of like the minor hockey rink style where there's only seating on three sides, if I remember correct, and people can just kind of stand behind the net in kind of an open area, which is not, you don't expect to see that all the time anymore. Like even at Western, we had not even a complete bowl, but we still had seating on one end, and the corners were just kind of missing. But this, if I don't think there was anything behind the actual visiting goal.
Cornell was by far and away one of my favorite places to play, which is ironic because I don't think we ever won a game against him in 4 years, but it was just such a cool atmosphere to be in, and it's a difficult but a really fun place to play. Was there anything similar to that out in the Western, in the CCHA though? Because we didn't get there very often. We got Lake State, Michigan Tech was in the WCHA, Michigan State. That's all we got.
Yeah. And I would say actually, Western has a really great home atmosphere, and a lot like that was the one thing. If you look at like Western's home and away records, at home were far superior than we were ever on the road. Probably, and I know that's kind of normal for a lot of teams, but it's like exaggerated. We have a very popular student base. They're rowdy. They love being at the game. Line up hours before games to get in. So we had a really good home atmosphere that mimicked sort of what Cornell was like. So it kind of made you comfortable being in that environment because it's loud, there's lots of yelling, things are going on. But even like a small rink like Ferris State, like they used to have this person who would write something on a cardboard piece of paper or whatever, and walk behind the net showing the students, and they'd all be laughing, but you couldn't see what was written, and that would like drive players nuts. And their mascot would ride down a sled down the stairs and just smash into the boards, and just random things that would happen at that place too. But it's all, it's all the college fun.
So after your first 2 years there, you only played one more game. Was it tough to take a back seat to watch the team go on kind of without you as a starting goaltender?
Yeah, I mean it's difficult, but at the same time, you're having great experiences too. I mean, I played with a lot of good players, a lot of good guys, and you can either sit and sulk that you're not playing, or you can go out and find ways during the week to, help your team in any way you can. I mean, those games, like little 3-on-3 games after practice from the blue line in, those become your games, and you play hard in that, or you battle in practice, you stay out after morning skate for guys that want to get some extra time in. You do what you can. Ultimately, you don't get to decide who plays. You can do your work and you can do everything you can control, but the coaches are going to make their decisions however they see fit. And you see big picture too, is that you're going through school, and there's an after piece to that that is also very important as a student athlete. So, it's not that you ever lost that drive to want to play, but it's how you kind of manage those emotions. And even headed into I think the hardest one was between playing a lot my sophomore year and then not playing at all in my junior year, is that going into my senior year is when you got one more kick at this and you're gonna try to play. So that summer I worked, you buckled down again. I went to Mitch Korn's camp to spend some time there.
I didn't know you were a child of the corn as well. That's
Yeah,
great.
my so my goalie coach at Western was a volunteer coach by the name of Al Avery, who's a Michigan State trooper by day. And he had worked a bunch at Mitch's camp. And so I went up to Buffalo for a week there. And I did everything I could to try to get ready for that senior year. And we all battled in camp. And I got 20 minutes of playing time. It didn't go great, but it is what it is. And it's back to the grind of just doing what you need to do to try to help the team. And it's. I think it was most difficult, obviously, if the team's not having like overall success, then you're wondering like, why can't I get a shot at this? But again, it's back to you can't control those parts, so just work hard every day and see what happens.
A lot of times people don't understand, especially at college, how important the number three goalie can be for all the reasons you listed, eating shots before, after practice, extra sessions. And really, in college, it's much more of a team setting, even than in pro sometimes, because you're in school together, you live together, like you're really a family. So even if you're not playing a lot of times those guys still have a great college experience. It sounds like you did as well. You graduated in 2006. What did you do for the next 11 seasons until you made your debut with the Hawks?
So that summer after my senior year, I actually took my first internship in accounting. So I worked in public accounting for 3 months, and my intentions were to go into grad school. And kind of nearing the end of that summer, I got a call from our coach, and he said, "Hey, can you pop by the rink? I got an idea for you. I want to run by you." And at the time, we really hadn't had any graduate assistants working with our team. So he brought up the idea of saying, "I want to start this off and I want you to be first." So I went into grad school and I was able to go back and kind of work with the team. So I basically spent another season at school going to class and spending actually more time at the rink, but on the coaching side. During games, I sat at the laptop breaking film down, and I just any kind of odd job around the rink, you're just kind of on the different side of the door. So that was actually a really interesting season, especially traveling on the road. You kind of monitor curfew and then you just make sure you're at morning skate the next day and stuff like that. So it was that was kind of a really cool experience. And then after I kind of finished up grad school, my girlfriend at the time, now wife Erin, she had moved up to Chicago to take a job, and accounting jobs aren't so hard to find in Chicago. So here I moved, and in talking to some people, they said, "Reach out to Johnny Zeishouse if you want to play." And goalie, Division One on the resume. I think it took 2 hours to find a team to play on.
So you're a hot commodity coming into beer league.
Yeah, it wasn't very hard to get. One, it was kind of takes you back when they're saying, "Oh, you got to go on a free agent list." I'm like, I just want to skate. Like, what is this? Is there contract negotiations, or how does this work?
Were you paid in cases of beer or fists of vodka? What do you want?
So I ended up just kind of playing, grabbing a team up at Johnny's, and you just start meeting people, and you get on some different teams, and I just found groups that I liked playing with, and the game was fun. You don't have to take it seriously, but you can show up, and there's lots of guys that have played kind of all over the place. You kind of name the level, it kind of exists here in Chicago, and it was fun going to the rink, and so I still enjoyed playing. Oddly, still enjoyed kind of getting hit by the puck, and so just working away and playing men's league.
There's so many of us that just quit and want to go play defense or forward. You never lost your passion and drive to play goaltender?
I kind of look back and say, with the way kind of college went in terms of playing, I felt like I wasn't done. And maybe I didn't get to, I don't know, go out on my own terms or something like that. I don't know. I don't really have like a definitive reason. I always thought that when I was done playing competitively, that would kind of be the end of it, but it didn't feel that way. So I just kind of stuck in there, and it was still fun. So that was the key, is I enjoyed being at the rink and stopping pucks still. So
So how'd the opportunity come up for you to be an emergency backup for the Hawks, or E-Bug as it's known in the hockey community?
yeah, so it's kind of been around for a while. It used to be they just had to have lists of guys, and they would just have to call kind of on demand and see who'd come to the rink. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out that that's probably not the best system to have in place. But I was playing up at Johnny's, and when they kind of put that rule in place, Tom Morrow, who was the owner of Johnny's Ice House, got a call from actually, I think it was Mark Bernard. And
So Bernie was the guy searching him out?
yeah,
Oh, God, I
because I
can't
think
even
at the time
imagine that
it was.
phone call.
Well, I think it was with him being kind of in charge of like minor league affiliations and stuff like that, that kind of just fell to him. And the Hawks were using Johnny's like as a practice facility. It's kind of known as a place that's got some good leagues, so I think it was just an easy place to kind of start at first. And Tommy had played my first was playing at Johnny's. He actually played in one of the leagues, so I kind of got to know him. So he threw my name out there, and that's when Bernie reached out and was like, "Do you want to be on this list?" How many people were? It was clearly more than just one. I mean, I'm sure it's at least like a half dozen or more guys, just in the case they needed it. Headed into 2 seasons ago, the NHL changed the rule and said you got to have someone in the building, and that's when it kind of changes from kind of like a funny story you can give like a tidbit of yourself, like, "Hey, and in case of emergency, like I could be one of 10 people that are going to get a phone call." Now it's a time commitment.
Yeah, it came about because Luongo and Montoya both got hurt the one game, and Florida was scrambling. They almost put Rob Tallis in, and then Derek McKenzie almost went in, and then finally one of the two guys came back out. So they kind of created a formalized way to have somebody like yourself in the building.
And it makes sense if you think about certain places. It's probably not as abundant as here. Like you could relatively quickly, you can probably find someone to get to the United Center, but in a place like Florida, that might not be as easy. So it makes a lot of sense. And they, we talked about my wife and I talked about kind of what we were going to do about this and whether or not I was going to take advantage of like going to NHL games for free essentially. And, lo and behold, I ended up taking a dozen games and just happened to pick Winnipeg, in March.
So walk me through that day. Did you go to work and do your normal deal there and then head down to the rink? Or did you actually just take the day off and head down? How did it play out for you?
Every day that I had a game was no different than any other day that I kind of had, whether it was a Hawks game night or not. Like those kind of evening games, I still, got up in the morning, got to work, got the kids where they needed to be, all that. Worked my full day, kind of the prototypical day, except needing to get to the game that night. Kind of, I think the rule was kind of be there by warm-ups.
Did you know you were going in that night? I mean, in terms of just dressing?
No, up until I was probably about a block away from the United Center is when they called and said, "Hey, something's up, but you're probably coming downstairs." So that's when and even at that point, like, there's stories around of guys getting a dress for a night. They sit behind the scenes, some sit on the bench, stuff like that. That is what you think the pinnacle of that is. Like, just kind of for one night, kind of pretend to be an NHL player. So that's when it was like, "All right, I did this all year, and for one night I'm going downstairs." That's pretty cool.
Here's my reward. So you go out. Did you actually take warm-ups and then sit on the bench?
I didn't take warm up or sit on the bench. They again, no one's, I think, at that point ever considering that you're going to have to enter a game. And the way the rule I think is written is that if you take warm-ups and sit on the bench, you're considered part of the game. So if something happens, you just have to enter the game and play. But if you stay kind of behind the scenes and not do any of those things, then if you have to go in, you can take warm-up. Then it becomes like they leave it as like an emergency situation, and you can have some warm-up shots. Now, I don't think I have to tell you this, but a dozen or so shots. Wristers from the hash marks are not going to get you NHL ready.
They don't do anything for you. It's like when the coach looks down to you at the end of the bench and he's thinking about pulling the other guy and he goes, "Get ready." And it's like, what am I supposed to do? Jumping jacks? As a goalie, you can't get ready on the bench. You just got to get out there and do it.
So part of you is thinking like, "Oh man, I'd love to just like sit out on the bench," but you're not really in a position to be making demands, right? So I just kind of hung out and watched the game like in the players lounge in full gear, which was interesting to say the least. But no warm-up that night, no walking down the tunnel or nothing, just kind of sitting there watching the game with Crawford and Toews and Forsberg and the other scratches that night.
So when it finally happens, I mean, are you watching the monitor and you see Delia get hurt? What goes through your head? What's your heart rate doing?
Well, the first thing that I actually remember was Forsberg and Crawford started talking because they actually thought that, you know, like Colin took this puck in a kind of an unforgiving spot, and you kind of think that they're going to shake it off. And I just remember staring at that TV like, no,
This isn't
that's
happening.
none of that actually just happened. And that's when like your heart's going like, okay, like there's a kind of an issue here. There's still a bunch of this game left. And that's when the trainer came running down saying, like, you know, get off the couch. things are happening and you're next.
Wow.
I mean, you're trying to remain as calm as possible, but I think there's also some shock that's taking place at the same time. But at that point, there's no real backing out. Like, this is what you signed up for. And it's gonna go how it's gonna go, and you just kind of go out and play.
So who was the person that actually came and told you you're going in?
So at first it was one of the assistant equipment manager. He was sent to kind of get you ready in case he did have to come out, because at that point they're not really sure.
Who was it? Was it DJ?
You know what? It actually was. It was DJ.
No way.
Yeah, that's now that I think about it, it was him. He's the one that came running down and was telling me to grab my gear and start to get ready just in case he was going to come out. But they weren't really sure because the trainer had to run out there first and kind of see what was going on, and so they're just kind of prepping for worst case scenario here at that point. And then Kevin Dineen came down too and was telling you to, you're going out.
So the two guys that have told you, DJ Koga, I was with in Peoria, and Kevin Dineen was my head coach in Portland. That's why this is 6 degrees here. Anyway, go on. So Dino tells you you're going in.
Yeah, and then he so at that point you're grabbing. All I had to grab was my gloves and my helmet, and Parchy starts walking out with my sticks, and I just had grabbed one without thinking, and I'm using some sticks that are about ready to turn to dust. I mean, they were my leftover stock from college. I left with a couple bundles or whatever, so being an accountant, I'm frugal enough that I'll keep using stuff until it can't be used anymore. And I'm thinking in my head like, well, this isn't the my beer league game stick that I got in my hand. Like, I got to get that one at least. And then I get remember in my head like, oh wait, the shaft cracked the other day. So I'm like, all right, I got to use this backup. So I'm sitting there trying to figure out like which stick I should use. Going into this NHL game, like that's going to be like make or break. There is actually, I think if you like watch some of the game footage when they're looking down the tunnel, you can see me like having a conversation with Troy, trying to figure out which stick I'm going to use. And I don't know. But I can't explain why that was important at the time, but it was.
So one of my favorite parts of this whole thing, though, is when you finally emerge from the locker room, come walking up to the bench, and Quenneville looks at you, and he's got a huge smile on his face. And you can kind of make out what he's saying as you're headed in, but do you remember his exact words to you as you went out
Yeah,
on the ice?
it was go get 'em, kid. And
That's what it looked like.
there was so many people that referred to me as a kid that night, and I was the oldest player on the ice the moment I stepped on. Like, Patrick Sharp was playing out his last few games, and I was a couple months older than him. Like, he was getting ready to retire, and I was making my debut.
So what were the boys saying to you when you got out there? I mean, I've kind of known these scenarios because I was a big surprise of the NHL when I showed up the one year. Nobody'd ever heard of me. So I remember people skating by kind of wide-eyed going, "Hey, welcome to the league, kid. Did you get any of that?"
You know, when I was skating on the ice, I'm sure there was 1,000 things said to me, and I didn't hear a single one. Like, that is just pure shock that you're entering that ice, and your mind is all over the place that you can't. I don't think I could have held a conversation with anybody at that moment. Even taking warm-ups, like, just as simple as like two players shooting, I couldn't even like figure out where a puck was going to be coming from next. And it's just every other one. Like, it's not a difficult scenario to play out. But even during the game, like, a stoppage of play, one of the refs skated by and he's like, "How about this?" And I was like, "Yeah, how about this?" Like,
Right. I'm the one that can look like an idiot in front of everybody here, buddy.
yeah, like, how about, like, can we do running time? Like, how do we get this going here? Like,
So, do you remember your first shot and how good did it feel to make that save and get it behind you?
that was the most important thing I think that happened that entire night. And it was, just a bad angle shot that I used, VH on something that nobody would do anymore. So it was, a technically an old school play, I guess, in today's game, but it didn't matter. The puck hit me and it stayed out of the net. And that's, you just have to get through it. And that reminds you that it's just hockey, so just play, and it's gonna go how it's gonna go, but just do what you know how to do.
Yeah, and it's not like you didn't have experience. You played high-level Division I hockey. And you can take a goalie out of that and plug them in the NHL, and they can be successful. It's not usually 12 years later after they're finished with their
Yeah.
career like yours, but do you
Late
remember?
bloomer.
Yeah, I mean, you had seven saves, I guess. Do you remember every save of the game?
Yeah, and it's weird. You even remember like shots that whizzed by the net, like that come that was one of the things too, that the biggest difference of like in men's league, like people are they gotta go to work the next day, so a lot of pucks they're like trying to get out of the way of, like the amount of traffic and trying to find pucks, and the players are huge, and they know where to stand to not get hit, but that allows pucks to get through. Guys can get pucks through. So I remember like just the traffic and just trying to find the puck was, a chore in itself. And even, yeah, like I said, even ones like that whizzed by the net, like I remember those ones. And you're just like, where did that puck even come from?
Let's actually talk about that a bit because aside from the super cool story of this, what did you face out there that did feel different? Obviously, the traffic, finding pucks. What really struck you as something that you hadn't experienced yet as a goalie?
Well, if you watch that portion of the game, I mean, it was, there was a 4-goal lead, and the ability for NHL players to get themselves into a position to block a shot, like there was probably 20 pucks that were blocked in 14 minutes of hockey.
The boys were
And
playing hard for you.
right, and the amount that they were like, one, that they can ratchet it up and just lock down and just know where to be to get in the way of a puck. And because you know that they're going to be shooting from anywhere and everywhere just to see what's going to happen, maybe more so than they would, like what was happening for the rest of that game. And that makes complete sense. Like just see what goes, what can go on with this goalie coming in. But, those, it's incredible to know like that they can kind of, it was like having extra goalies out there. Like I kid you not. That's what it felt like.
I think the biggest save that I saw at least is a backdoor on Paul Stastny that you absolutely straight up robbed him. Like for real. This wasn't like beer league guy comes in and makes a decent save. This was a legit, unreal save. Crowd goes absolutely bonkers. Like when you made that save, did it just course through your veins like you'd have been hit by lightning?
It did. After a couple seconds, because if you watch it, my first reaction is, "Where's the puck?"
Oh, you didn't know where it was.
I was like, "I'm pretty sure I got that." And then I'm looking around, and then I'm like, "Oh, there it is." That's when it felt good, because just that one split second of like, I think I got there, but I'm not sure.
So as time was running off the clock, you played 14 minutes. The later it got in the period, were you able to really kind of savor it, enjoy it, and think, "Hey, I'm doing this, man. This is the NHL. What a great time."
Yeah, once you that's when it kind of gets into a bit more of a game rhythm. Like at first there's obviously nerves and you're trying to get it was a probably a good minute or so before I faced a puck, and that's when it just felt more like this is a hockey game. You can soak it in of like the experience. Even like a random thing, like I stopped one rim around the boards behind the net, and I was like, "Yeah, I did that in the NHL." Like I'm a terrible puck handler, but I set one up behind the net.
And your stick didn't break.
Yeah, my stick didn't break. I didn't fall down. Like, but yeah, that's when those moments are kind of ticking down. Like, you're, I think, ready for it to be over, but at the same time, you understand like this was awesome.
Was it a wash of relief though once the seconds ticked off and the game finally ended?
Oh, biggest sigh of relief ever. Like, you're just, yeah, 14 minutes felt like a lifetime.
I'm sure.
Like, you're just, it's not like the, like, we play 15-minute beer league periods, right? And this was less than that, and it felt like an eternity. But to get through that game and, you make some saves, I mean, it felt good. I mean, you're obviously, definitely relieved, but definitely very, very happy.
I mean, this wasn't a novelty, though. That's the thing. And I hope people realize this, that you played in the NHL. This wasn't a fluke. It's obviously a fluke that two guys got injured, but you went out, you're prepared. Regardless if it had been 11 years, 12 years since college, you played. Nobody could ever take that away from you. But, when you look back on this and you can share it with people, what's your feelings on it?
I take a lot of pride in it, and that's where you get into certain certain experiences that I've had since, and you talk to players, and I think that's if you're going to be self-conscious about how it's going to be received, it's to other hockey players and how they view it, and talking to like Hawk alumni or even other guys that I've played with or current players, like they all look at on it like that's awesome. Like you did it, and like that's amazing, and you made it, and like welcome and good job. And that's when it really like resonates with you. Like yeah, you know what? I played in the NHL, and it was most people view it as like the super talented player that's going to get there kind of regardless, or the guy that works really hard. Well, I found like option C, which maybe not as conventional, but it's an amazing experience, and I actually really like how my kids view it. They don't know any of the story. They just saw you do something, and they get to go to Hawks games, and they remember that, and they love number 90 now, and that makes it a million times better than it probably was.
So when you're the first star of the game, did you have any idea what to do when you skated out for it?
None at all. Like people are saying that, you should have like done a full lap or all kinds of stuff, but I don't think you can't process all the emotions and all the things that are coming at you at that moment. Like even you're taking post-game interview on the bench, and it's hard to even find words to describe what just took place because I don't even think you're sure at that moment. Like you weren't expecting it, you weren't prepared for it, so you didn't have any visions of this. Like I wasn't sitting there watching games ever pondering like entering a game. Again, because you think that just getting downstairs and kind of being around the guys for a night would have been kind of the peak.
You had some absolute classic lines though in the post-game media scrum. I mean, for some guys that walk off and do this, they'd probably be so shell-shocked they couldn't even handle doing the media. But my favorite line you had was, "You just keep grinding and play in beer league, and eventually you'll get your chance." I mean, had you been sitting on that line for years and years, or did it just come to you in the moment?
I think that was I've actually said this before, I think, is that was one of like the proudest parts of that night was that during the interview time, you didn't lock up, I didn't get nervous. I just spoke, and I was myself. Like I don't have to do that every day, right? Like you're getting asked the same questions, and now a lot of these aren't going to be the same questions that are asked day in and day out in the NHL, but I can just speak freely, and it was all just kind of whatever came to mind at the time, and you kind of had fun with it, and eventually you just kind of fall in like this is a good time, everybody's having a good time with this, so let's just enjoy this for what it is.
Absolutely. Just run with it. I mean, some of the lines you had, even I'm just hitting my prime, 35, 36. Like, I mean, that's the stuff that PR teams wish they'd get out of players, to be honest with you. Like, so many times we're just clammed up and afraid to show personality. You must have felt completely free in that interview.
Yeah, and I mean, You at the moment, like the only one you have to answer to is yourself and your family, and you don't have anything. I didn't have a connection to the Hawks other than going to these games, and you're not worried about, your next contract or anything like that. Like you can just have fun and treat it like it is a game, and that you just had an and you just did something that was really awesome.
So did you have friends and family after this, though, that thought all of a sudden, Scott's an NHL goalie. Somebody's got to offer him a contract.
There's probably a few people that thought like you could go and try to do something, and you just have to kind of temper expectations that like 14 minutes of like clinging to your life is not what it takes to be a pro, and to do this on a day in and day out basis. But I think generally speaking, like people kind of understand, what it was, and that it's not going to turn into something bigger than that.
What did your wife say to you after this?
You know what? It was not much words that were spoken. It was just a lot of like, well, and then staring.
I mean, was it
Like
emo
you,
was it emotional though?
it was fun. Like we had a lot of laughs and joy, and they wanted to kind of hear the behind the scenes story about like you fill them in as best you could kind of before you even entered the rink, just to let them know that you're gonna like be downstairs, and if you they usually had the games on when especially if I was at the game that night, but with the kids and stuff, it might not have been watching from like pregame and stuff like that. So just a lot of questions and a lot of smiles, but it was, I mean, just you didn't even have words to describe it to them. Like my parents were actually in town because it was Easter weekend, so they were able to watch the game, and they because they wouldn't otherwise even seen any of it until probably after the fact and watching media coverage versus watching it live unfold. So them being there, just amplified everything too. And it was funny to kind of talk to my dad, especially after that. And my dad's not one that ever he was always just preached kind of like go out, work hard, have fun, and do what you can do, and the chips will fall where they fall. But I remember him asking me even about how many like shots I faced, thinking that they overcounted and stuff like that. I'm like, no, Dad, no, we're not doing that. This is not happening. We never did that when I was a kid. Why are we doing that now?
I can imagine after this all happens that one walking back into work the next day must have been mayhem, but the media commitments and requests were probably huge. Did it ever start to get kind of overwhelming?
By the end of the weekend, I had reached my point where it was too much. It was a lot, it's relentless. Let's say they reach out to the Hawks, they're going to reach out through your work. They're going to reach out through your wife's work, your parents. Like Western Michigan was fielding phone calls. You name it, like the requests are coming in. And at first, when I walked out of that rink, and I had kind of talked to Adam and his team there at the Hawks, like the communication guys, I said, I'm good. Like, I don't know what else I can do to this. Like, I did post game. Like, I'm good. When it didn't kind of end there, we realized like I'm not prepared for any of this. And it was on Monday when you start to reach out to people that had offered up help before the weekend, kind of knowing where it was trending, to say like, all right, it's time. Like, what do I do here? And luckily, there's a lot of good people that kind of help you manage things and stuff like that. So,
So finally, it gets to the NHL awards ceremony, though, and they ask you to come out and help present the Vezina. Was this kind of the moment where you said, you know what, let's have some fun with this? I think I'm ready to do this again and step back into the limelight.
yeah, and it was. Everybody thinks you kind of turn down everything just blanketed. And that was not really what was taking place. What it became was when you reach out for help is you start to how you manage the requests and you evaluate them each individually instead of just instantly saying no to everything. Because there were certain things that I explored potentially doing because it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. And to just say no is not. You're not being fair to yourself because that opportunity is it's not coming again. Certain things are just even to speak to I don't know, like a TV show, like Ellen. We talked to Ellen about potentially going on there, and it was Easter weekend, so there are a lot of stories that built up. So you ultimately don't get selected to go on, but you at least have the conversation to say, like, when am I going to get this opportunity again? The answer is, I'm an accountant. Never. When the NHL presented it, my first thought was that it was a joke, to be honest with you.
This can't be real.
No way. And then it was said, well, they don't joke about stuff. They just put requests out. So this is 100% real. And then it was like, well, you've got to go and do, I've got to do this because I will, I'll be, looking back on that, like that was a wasted opportunity to go, like to not go and take advantage of something like that. So it didn't really take long to decide that that was something that I should go and do and have fun with for the weekend or for the week or whatever. And so my wife and I were able to get out to Vegas, and we had never been as well. So it was like a bunch of we were able to kind of loop in a lot of things on a Vegas trip centered around something that was an awesome experience.
So when you're in Vegas for this, though, were there players and other people at the banquet coming up to you just looking to shake Scott Foster's hand, tell you how good you'd done? And also, were you more nervous stepping onto the stage for that or stepping onto the ice in Chicago?
100% stepping onto the stage that night. One, because there's a rehearsal in the morning, so a lot of it's like you're practicing for this, and as you kind of alluded to, like with interviews and stuff, I'm more of a shoot from the cuff type of person. I think that's when it's funny, not scripted and things like that. So you're now kind of following a quote unquote script, and so definitely more nervous. I even look at that video and like, why, what? Like, I'm clearly, I don't know what to do with my hands, and like,
You're
I'm that
self-critiquing, like truly a goalie here. You're looking back at your video to see what you could do better.
guy. We had a lot of fun with that. And even like some of the people, I remember there was some of like the US women's Olympian players out there, and I'm like, oh, I gotta talk to them. And you kind of have a chance to meet them, and all they want to do is talk about, your time for a few minutes in the NHL. And I'm like, I have so many questions about like all these epic games you guys have played. But I mean, that's kind of been the case, is you've had this like one moment in time, and people want to talk about it. And that's, well, that's hockey people, right? They love hockey stories, so they want to hear them. But I'm also a hockey person, so I want to hear their stories.
Absolutely. Is there anything from that night that still sticks out into your mind as being kind of unique, or maybe just something that one of the players said to you after the game?
I remember that all the guys and the way they were celebrating after the game. Like it was essentially a lot. It was a lost season at that point, but it was just guys were going like berserk on the ice. Like people were spraying water bottles and, like just the hooting and hollering and stuff about this. Like it was a 6-2 win on a Thursday night, like on a season that's just being played out. But it was treated like so much more than that. And that just goes to show that they like understand like the magnitude of what just took place, like for you. And that's it makes it special that they took joy in that too.
So what was it like the next day at work? Did you get anything done?
No, not really. Quite frankly, I came in because I didn't know what else to do.
You probably still felt like you were floating at that point, right?
Yeah, I knew the crash was going to happen eventually because I didn't sleep at all that night. Your phone's like endless. I watched the game again that morning, and then it was just like I can't sit here at home and do nothing. That'll drive me like insane. I got too many things like going through my head right now, so I just went into work like that was going to like solve my issues that I was having. But that's just like a parade of people that want to talk about like your night, and it was a lot of fun, and I work with a lot of great people, so you're telling stories and having fun with it there. But eventually you just kind of hit that wall, like I can't, I need to get out of here. It was a good time to have here and spend time with those people, but I was ready to get out of here.
Out of this whole experience, not really on the ice, but away from it, who was the coolest person that reached out to you or that you talked to that you would have never expected?
That's a great question. I would say that a lot of it has been some of the Hawks alumni that have kind of brought you into their family? Like people like Dennis Savard, like you meet him and he's one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. He treats you just like he treats anybody else, for one, but he also, when if he introduces you to somebody, he proudly tells like this story about something that you did for the Hawks. So I would have to say, like, that whole group of guys and the way that they kind of welcome you right in has been unbelievable.
How about people from the past, though, like even college? I remember Paul Shahura just going bananas, like, Fozzie's in the net, and Jeff LaVecchio and these guys. Did you hear from some of your past teammates that you wouldn't have expected from?
That I think speaks to just the character of those guys too. I mean, a lot, you name it, like people reached out, but like hearing from a lot of those guys, and maybe you've lost touch with a couple of them here and there, but yeah, you definitely had some like rekindled some like old relationships that have kind of, been lost a little bit. And you hear from those guys and you tell stories and stuff like that. And it's just like, back in college or old times, like it's amazing how fast that just like reignites like the friendships from all the battles and stuff that you guys have been through, and just like the amount of joy that they feel too for what kind of took place that night, and even just like the reaction to like Western Michigan as a whole, and the hockey team, like they, within a couple weeks, they're already talking about how they're putting like a Foster jersey up on the NHL wall and the plaques and stuff with all the guys that have played. And it feels a little bit weird at first because you're looking at all the guys that have how they made it and the work that they put in, and then your jersey's going up with them, and it feels odd, but you realize how much like how much pride you can have in that, and that's because the school and the team and the players, they have pride in it as well, and in the Bronco community. So it's the reactions are amazing.
College hockey is such a special experience in all our lives. I had that at St. Lawrence. I can tell it comes through for you at Western Michigan. Lastly, here, I got to know though, what do you have for advice for beer leaguers out there that are looking to make their NHL debut someday?
Oh, your equipment. I remember I just had gotten new gear about 3 weeks earlier, and the thought of entering that ice in my old stuff would have just been a disaster.
Was it trash? Like it'd been years
Oh,
old.
I mean, I had gotten new gear since leaving school, but it was definitely a few skates overdue for replacement. You kind of looking at you walk out there, you got a nice looking set and stuff, but I was like, oh man, like if this was the beginning of March, this would have been bad. This would have been bad.
Well, you did. You had a nice dark setup, your mask, like you looked the part, man.
Well, yeah, look good, feel good, right?
That's the whole key to everything as a goalie, right?
Yeah.
You have such an incredible story. It really is. And I'm so happy we got a chance to kind of chronicle with this. And I hope it can happen again for you. That'd be amazing if you could be a two-timer out there. I know you're in demand, but thanks so much for coming and telling your story. And I'm so happy that your kids can look at Superhero Dad now as a former NHL goalie. Thanks again.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
Thanks for listening to 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. Please make sure that you like, comment, leave a rating, subscribe, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere that you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.